This conference is being recorded.
This is Luke Allison from CriticalBench.com, and I'm here with Jason Paris. Jason, how are you?
I'm great, Luke. Thanks, and thanks for inviting me on the call. How are you today?
I'm good, thanks. Glad to have you here.
Take a
second and sort of introduce yourself. Give some of the listeners an idea about your background working with athletes.
Okay, sure. So I originally started out in the track and field. I was a competitive track and field runner in college myself. And after I weaned out of the track and field running myself, I started to get into speed work. I continued with the track, and then from the track, I continued to do speed work with rugby players. And then from that, I moved into the strength and conditioning aspect of it. And then from there, I branched further. I currently work with a college football team, and I also do some private training on my own.
Okay, and as you look at sort of the training necessary for college football players, what really stands out? What strikes you actually in terms of what they
need? I think the biggest thing, especially with football, is the intensity. Football players and football teams from Division I to Division III, you go through the weight room and you go on the field for the conditioning and the practices. Every drill, every step you take is 110%. And I found that's a little bit different from other sports. And that's by far the biggest standout I find with football, is the intensity level is so much greater.
There's a lot of money involved, so that intensity is necessary, I think, at this point. Is there a kind of training or training methodology that you prefer? Maybe not something you're using now, but something you've come across?
Well, I basically do. I've tried a bunch of different things over the past years, and pick pieces from whatever. There's always something useful that another guy has, so you just kind of put that all together, and it's almost kind of developed like a hodgepodge. But for football, and actually any sport, I find explosiveness isn't going to hurt anybody in the sport. So I do believe the Olympic lifts are very good at developing that explosiveness. So any program that involves athletes, I definitely have Olympic lifting aspect to it.
And has anything ever happened to cause you to significantly change the type of training that you like to prescribe for athletes?
With me in particular, nothing has happened, but being in the field for a while now, I've seen stuff and I've heard stuff. So I've definitely heard of athletes getting hurt when they do maxes. So there becomes a point when you say, when you're squatting, for instance, you would say 500 pounds is enough. So then a guy could look good and still hit 500 pounds fairly easily, but then you say, do we need to risk going any higher? And same with some of the Olympic lifts. I've heard of people banging their elbows on their knees when they catch it nice and deep and breaking their wrist because of that. So again, I guess my thing is I cut people off a little earlier than what they have in them. We're not Olympic lifters. I train athletes and football players, so the weight lifting is to enhance their sport. So they're not going to be super perfect at the weight lifting when it comes to the Olympic lift. So I always will cut them off a little lighter than what they can actually do. So I really don't do true maxes.
So something like a Circumax, do you like to leave them like 2 to 3 reps or just a lower percentage of what they can lift?
The general cutoff is when I find the technique is I start to see a major decline in the technique,
okay.
And then that's my cutoff. If I find a 2 rep or 3 rep max is almost the same thing because you can't do another rep, so it's the same as a 1 rep max. You can't do another rep anyway. So I still, if I'm doing a 2 rep Max, and you see that the first one was kind of shaky, there's no sense doing the second one. So I don't find there's too much of a difference between doing like a 3-rep max or just going a full out max. It all depends on the technique.
There's some controversy and some difference of opinion about whether football players should deadlift just because of the sort of technique involved with mastering that lift. Is that something you have strong feelings one way or the other on?
Personally, myself, I like deadlifts. But it depends. Every program is different. So I do some private stuff, and I also do work at a university as well. And at the university, you have 110 to 90 kids on a football team. So depending on how many coaches you have available, it's hard to watch all those kids. So I've heard of some programs that they have 3 kids per coach, and they space it over the day. So in that situation, I think you could do deadlifts. But I've heard of other schools that you have one coach that has to watch 30 or 40 athletes. So the amount of weight that's used in a deadlift, you can't effectively put it in a program where you have to watch so many athletes. But on a private setting, I always have people do deadlifts just as it's such an effective lift, and I can keep a close eye on them. So I feel that it can be fairly safe when I watch it so closely.
I think that's probably a good rule of thumb for anyone that's working with a group of athletes to keep in mind. Do you use any lifts as indicators? And if so, how do you sort of regulate when you're waiting for people to sort of progress or not respond?
Well, we do the typical squat, bench, and power cleans for the indicators. The clean, the power clean, is a good measure of your power, like your strength to your weight ratio. So that's a very effective measurement tool. The squat and the bench aren't as effective, but for some reason, it's been around for a long, long time. So every school that I know of will do a squat and a bench. In the NFL Combine, you do a 225 bench test. So the bench isn't really something that you're going to get away with, so it doesn't really prove too much with your athletic ability or your ability to play football. But it's something that coaches often look for. Like I say, it's in the Combine. So it is a test that is performed, and the same with the squat. The squat is definitely a good lower body predictor of strength, and so that one I don't have as much of a problem with, but still do all three. But the power clean is the key one that really put the emphasis and the focus on.
And those are things that will sort of be cycled in different ways and in sort of different weeks and things like that, and I assume it's got a different structure in season and out of season.
Yes, it does. This is the out of season now. As you get ready for, the 2-a-days will come here in another 3 or 4 weeks. So now this is where we get our quality work in the summer. We run 2 days a week, we lift 3 days a week, and we build up. The maxes were done in about mid-summer, so you want to give the kids time to. He's going to transition a little more from the heavy stuff to a little bit more of the conditioning work so they can be ready to do the 2-a-day practices. But throughout the year, he also incorporates all those lifts as well. And they cycle. They generally, if you compare it to, you're going to do heavy squats and power cleans and benches throughout the year, but you're going to cycle. In season, you keep it pretty light. But then in January, February, you can start up again, and you start building up heavy again until you get to the summer. And that's the summers where we will do the max testing.
And is it fairly easy to maintain during the season, or is that something that, that varies a lot between athletes?
It does vary between athletes, but it is difficult to maintain during the season. There are a number of reasons why it's so difficult. One is that the kids play every week, and you get banged up. Football is a contact sport, so you're not going to feel very good for a couple days, so you need a couple days of rest and recuperation. So you're going to miss a few days of lifting there. And we don't want to go heavy. You don't want people to be hurt, and you don't want them to be tired. So you can't really keep up that same kind of intensity throughout the season. Plus, school is in, so they have a full course load, and then they have football practice on top of that. So you really have to be very efficient and really attack what's important. So you just want to keep them healthy and not worry so much about getting as strong as possible. So there are definitely some kids that tail off as the season progresses, and there are other kids that seem to be able to maintain a little better than others. And it depends, too, on... Depends on... Schools are different. You have some kids that are starters, and they're going to play every week. Then you have other kids that are redshirting. They will keep developing throughout the year. And then you have other kids that are like third string, that chances are they're not going to play, or they're only going to get in for one play or two plays. So they can lift a little bit harder. Because usually the third string aren't usually as big and strong anyway, so they can use the extra work. So when they are called upon for, they'd be more physically ready for the challenge.
Okay, that's a nice lead into my next question. I've become aware of a concept that Dan John uses. I don't know if he's someone you're familiar with, but he calls shrinking the gap, this idea of the disparity between your strongest players and your weakest players, trying to make sort of whatever that amount is as small as possible. So if one of your starters had to be replaced by a second or third teamer, you're not sort of dropping several hundred pounds on the power clean or on the squat. Is that a focus? Is that something you even think about?
Yes, that's definitely a concern. And it depends on the position, too. So you have your linemen are usually the bigger, stronger guys. But you definitely want, you don't want a lineman that can only squat 200 pounds or such. They don't all have to be a 500-pound squat or a 500-pound plus, but you definitely want, you don't want a huge, huge margin. There's going to be kids that are going to be exceptional that can squat 600 pounds plus without a problem. Not everybody needs to be to that level, because there will become a point where, I'm not sure what the magical number is, but there's definitely a diminishing return at a certain point. So we can continue the squat, for example. After 500 pounds, will that really have that much of a benefit to you on the field? Chances are not too much. You won't notice that. But if you're not close to that at all, you definitely need to be up there, because you'll get pushed around. Even if your technique is fairly good and you're a fairly good athlete, again, this is a contact sport, so you need to be a certain strength and a certain size to just kind of take the beating that you're going to get on a daily basis.
I guess that's important for you to sort of maybe keep the kids out of the weight room that maybe like lifting weights more than they like playing football, because at the end of the day, they have to play football also. So, how much weight and size can you put on a freshman when it just arrives on campus? 4 years that they're there, that long.
Oh wow, that varies. You can pack a lot of weight on some kids. I know some schools have different sponsors, and we get sponsored by Muscle Milk. So we, after each lift, we can give the kids a Muscle Milk drink, which has some extra calories, extra protein, extra carbohydrates to help them grow and recover. But a general, we've had freshmen that respond super, super well, and they can gain, if they have to play in September, they can gain 30 pounds by the time that they step on campus at the end of their high school year in the summer until the September when they play. So over the course of 4 years, if a kid has aspirations in the NFL and he's good enough to play and he needs to really be that kind of size, it won't be a problem for him to gain over 60 pounds over that course of that time.
And that's pretty serious. I think most people would sort of identify with that and say that's a lot of weight. But it's, you know, that's prepared. If you're preparing for the NFL, you know, you're doing that at least 4 years out. So that's a very serious commitment and impressive at the same time.
I think you're right about it. There's a lot of weight. They're also talking. There are different levels of kids that go through a program. So if you're looking towards NFL, you have a special gift, a special genetics to start with. So it's a little easier for you to gain weight. You're just something special about you. And that means you may work a little harder in the weight room. You may pay extra special attention to when you have nutrition guidelines. And there's just usually just a little bit different. And that really makes it a little bit easier for you to gain weight. So that's not the typical kid, but there's definitely, without a question, there are kids that come through that can happen.
I guess that raises sort of what's at the other end of the scale. Do you have kids that come in, maybe skill position players that came from a program in high school where they didn't lift weights, maybe they don't like it, maybe they're just not any good at it, and what is that it's like for you as a coach?
There are definitely kids that have come from programs that didn't lift, or they had programs that was more like you could lift on your own. It wasn't as supervised. So as a freshman, you spend a lot of time working on technique. So the first months that they're there, if they've come from a program that they haven't really lifted before, you're not going to put a whole much of weight on the bar for them. They may be squatting 135 pounds, and you just may keep them there for a while until they can get the depth and they can get the form. And the same with the clean, they might not even clean 100 pounds. You're just going to keep them light, and until they can start progressing towards a reasonable technique, then you can start adding some weight to them. So those kids, they're set back. They're definitely at a disadvantage when it comes to them to gaining weight, because they just don't have – they're already going to be behind because they haven't had the development in high school, and now they're starting behind at the college level too because they're going to be more focused on the technique.
Yeah, it seems that you basically have to lift weights at this point. That wasn't always the case, but it doesn't seem, you know, approaching the 2009-2010 season that you can do that anymore. Talk a little bit about what characterizes a successful strength and conditioning program. Can you find sort of objective metrics, sort of aside from maybe win-loss record or bowl appearance or something like that?
I think the goal of a good strength and conditioning program, of course, everybody wants to win losses. But in the gym, we can't always. There's much more to football than just how strong you are. So we don't really have too much control over that. But what we really can and what we want to do is we want to have well-conditioned people, and you want to have the best metrics is the injuries. There are some injuries that can be prevented, and there are some that obviously is just going to happen just because of how rough the sport it is. But I think if you want to look at something, you want to look at your program, you want to look at how few injuries you have, how many starters start at the beginning of the year, how many of those starters are playing in the last game of the season? I think that's a very important aspect of a strength and conditioning program. Is we want, if you build a team that's in shape, you have a better chance that they're going to be able to take every play at full speed. I think it's when you're not going full speed is when you can start to develop some of those unnecessary injuries. So I find that the injury, looking at the injuries, is the best indication of how well of a program that you have.
And is that because injuries are just, they're so common that if you're playing sort of at a high level with those sort of big bodies moving so fast that, you know, a certain amount of people are just going to get hurt eventually, and sort of finding a way to avoid that is, you know, sort of a good goal?
Yeah, you're right. There's definitely going to be no question that injuries are going to happen because you're big and they're fast. And when you get two big and fast things coming together, something's going to give. So what we do want to minimize that. But there are some injuries, like you can see people get hamstring pulls, for instance. So you can kind of look at, why did they get that hamstring pull? Is that something that could have been prevented in the weight room through extra work on the posterior chain? Or was it just a freak accident? And like I had mentioned before, too, when you have somebody that's running 100%, somebody that's running 85%, chances are the 85% person is going to get hurt. And that can come back to the conditioning aspect. If you're not able to give 110% every play, chances are you're going to be run over, and you're more susceptible to getting injury then as well. So if you're not in the best shape that you can be, you're definitely going to want to take a few plays off. So you have to make sure that you're in good shape, and you just kind of work some of those areas that you know are susceptible to get a little more injury than others. Like I said, like your hamstrings, you often see people get hamstring pulls, and shoulders is another touchy area too that you often have people get injury into. So you want to pay particular attention to make sure that those areas are as strong and healthy as they can be at all times.
Sure, just to prepare them for those, you know, sort of inevitable collisions. In your experience, what are the boundaries that sort of separate strength coaches' responsibility from those of other coaches on the staff, whether they be coordinators or positional coaches or sort of anyone else?
Well, I think the biggest difference, the one that stands out most to me, is as a strength coach, your job is to have every kid ready and to be prepared to play football. So you don't have to really, obviously we don't teach them how to play football, but they have to go into, like I said, two-a-days are coming up soon. So as a strength coach, the head coach is expecting every kid that's going to come to those two-a-day practices to be ready to give 100%. So the head coach is not around too much, not in the weight room. So he's relying on the strength staff to make sure that the kids are ready for when they come to him for the start of two-a-days. And the same kind of goes throughout the season. The coach takes care of the positional stuff, but you just have to make sure that your kids are ready and in the best shape and the healthiest that they will come and ready to play. And there's some other little things that the coach will put on you. Like if you have, like you had mentioned before about gaining weight, so there are definitely kids that come in undersized, so the coach will expect you to, as a strength coach, the head coach will expect you as a strength coach to make sure that kid is half-decent size. And it also works the other way as well. There's some kids that have, I guess the university life can get a little too much, and they party a little too much or whatever, and they get a little too big. So then the head coach will also want you to get some of the kids to drop some weight.
And those are, Is that a responsibility that you're sort of able to take on just because you're not, I guess, working with film or game planning or things like that? You have those hours to give.
Yes, that's well, we do the strength and the conditioning aspect. So we have a certain amount of personal time with the kids, so we can do little extra things. Like, you know, a kid needs to gain weight, you can get them to bring in the diet, and then we will go and say, hey, this is where you can kind of increase or decrease your calories to fit your needs. And then after you lift weights, you can also get kids to do, we have, if you have enough time, we can also get the kids to do some conditioning or some other work that will help them get to their goal of either losing weight or gaining weight. But the football coaches, they just have the they have a very rigid schedule, and they you go to practice, everything is laid out. So you go to practice, you do your drills. But in the weight room, you have a little bit more flexibility at the end of the one weight training session. So that's when you can address the needs of the weight gain or the weight loss kids.
Now, because of your background track, I wanted to ask you, it seems like there's a movement for strength coaches to be teaching sort of really involved running mechanics, things like the sprinter start for the 40 dash and some other sort of lateral quickness things. Do you think that that's sort of the appropriate responsibility, or is that sort of, you know, maybe a private sector thing for someone with other, you know, track and field and speed experience?
Well, I think it's a good thing to do in the strength and conditioning. Like I say, we do agility and running twice a week, and we're lifting 3 times a week. So we have those 2 times a week that we're running. So it seems like a natural fit to at least bestow the basic mechanics to them, because there's a slight difference between 100-meter sprinter and a football player. A football player very rarely gets to be at full speed. So the mechanics are important, but they're not quite as important as they are in track. So it's not like we have to go into it too detailed, but we definitely do. I do feel that it's something that needs to be covered, and we do spend time teaching the basic fundamentals. We don't go beyond the basic fundamentals, but that is definitely something that's covered in more so in the beginning of the season or beginning of the off-season training. And we kind of hope that the kids will know by the time that the season or the end of the off-season, they should have those mechanicals pretty sound. And it's something too, you kind of work in the warm-up. We do dynamic warm-up. You would just do some more. That's another opportunity for you to get a little more of those mechanics into the into their neuromuscular memory system.
Sure. I think we're running out of time, but if people are interested, I know you mentioned you have private services that are available. Tell people about, you know, sort of where you are and how they can get in touch with you.
I am in Atlanta, Georgia, and you can email me at jasoncscs@gmail.com. I also do some online programming for people as well. For I know it's not everybody can afford to have a private one-on-one session, but they definitely want a little extra. So I do programs, and we do phone consultations and such as that. But again, the name is jasoncscs@gmail.com.
I think that about does it for us. But Jason, I want to thank you for the time and willingness to share some pretty good information. I think the listeners are going to really appreciate this.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed speaking with you.
Okay, take care.
Okay, bye.